This morning is the third of our four-part whirlwind tour of the book of Job. The first two parts are already on the website, and this one will be posted shortly afterwards if you want to listen through the whole thing. If you were here 2 weeks ago, you know we started in the very first chapters of Job, and I introduced it as a kind of fable. The first two chapters introduce the story. They begin once upon a time in the land of Ur, there was a man named Job, and continue to tell the story of a kind of wager between God and HaSatan, which means the adversary, over whether or not Job, who was righteous and wealthy and healthy, lots of kids, would continue to worship God even if he didn't have all of those things. All of it is stripped from him in those first two chapters. And then I skipped all the way to the end, which will be our sermon tomorrow or next week, where everything, spoiler alert, is restored, double, which is actually kind of a confusing ending if you've read your way through the whole thing. In the middle is a massive section that's all in poetry. It's 42 chapters long is the whole thing. And it contains profound reflections on the meaning of life, the meaning of suffering, what is good, what is evil, what are the consequences, where is God in all of that. And you're constantly brought up against those deep, dark questions that we all wrestle with at one level or another. Last week, we looked at just one speech of Job. Job, you may remember, is responding to his three friends who are trying to help him out and explain what's going on in these endless cycles, sometimes seeming to get close to the mark and other times pretty far off of it, but an always lively discussion. What happens today is it's worth now turning to, before we turn to the scriptures, I just want to say this. So what happens today, as you just heard Jacob read, is that we have one final response by a young whippersnapper named Elihu who tries to explain it all. And then, as though God had overheard all of it and was fed up with all of this human yammering, God begins to speak out of the whirlwind. Now, before we actually turn to the text itself, I want to retell one of my favorite stories. I've told it several times, and I will probably tell it several times more. And it's a story of Jewish wisdom. Now, it happens that centuries ago, there was a great rabbi in Russia. And this rabbi was known as the greatest scholar of the Torah. It was said of this rabbi that if he pulled up a sheet of paper, parchment, with the Torah, and somebody poked a hole through a letter, through the text, he could tell you on what letter of what word that pin came through on the other side. And he was asked once, "Rabbi, who is the greatest student you ever had?" And he said, "Ah, that is easy. Once I had a young student who came to my school, and he sat down along with all the other students and began his Torah study right at the very beginning. And he sat down to read, and he read, 'In the beginning, when God created the heaven and the earth, and all was waste and void, God said, let there be light. God said, God spoke. He poked his head up. God spoke. And he stood up in the room and said, God spoke. And then he went outside the house into the village and said, God spoke. And then he went to the next village and said to the people there, God spoke. And so he continued throughout Russia, going from village to village, proclaiming that God spoke. Now you may remember that about 6 weeks ago, I preached a sermon where I talked about how we too easily go up and eat Jesus' body and drink his blood without thinking how strange that is, how cannibalistic, how odd. I would suggest the same thing is probably true around this claim that God spoke. That what we say is that in this book we have captured words that God spoke to us, to human beings. And might I point out that there are people outside these walls who would think that that's ridiculous. Or, more accurately, there are people who, at least if their behavior is any indication, just shrug their shoulders. But this is a pretty profound thing, that God chooses to speak to humanity in such a way that we can understand it. And this, here in the book of Job, is one of God's great utterances. So to back up, it's as though God has been overhearing all of this complaining and conversation and thinking through why this suffering is happening. And he gets fed up with it. And now we can turn to the scriptures. So just begin on page 415 so you can see how this thing unfolds. So again, Job has gone through cycle after cycle after cycle with his three friends. And then on page 415, at the very end of chapter 31, Job says, "If my land has cried out against me and its furrows have wept together, if I have eaten its yield without payment and caused the death of its owners, let thorns grow instead of wheat and foul weeds instead of barley." The words of Job are ended. Boom. And then we have Elihu, who rebukes Job's friends in chapters 32, 33, 34, all the way through chapter 38. And there we are on page 420. Elihu's explained it all as best as it can be explained. And in chapter 38 it begins, "Then the Lord," notice those capital words hiding the tetragrammatron, "I will be who I will be, and I am who I am. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Gird up your loins like a man. I will question you, and you shall declare to me." Whoa! Can you imagine God addressing you like that? How would you feel? One thing I would point out is that there's no reason to hear this voice as a male voice. It could just as easily be a female voice. But it's a voice of great authority and power. And what does it seem to be saying? It says to the person who's listening to it, "Suck it up. Sit up straight. Stand up straight. Give a whole accounting. Do you know before whom you stand? Be a grown-up. No grumbling." God then shifts. "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the heavenly beings shouted for joy." How do you respond to that? There is no response. It is intended to be, well, humbling, deliberately so, and even a little bit sarcastically so. But I would point out, look at that last verse. "When the morning stars sang together and all the heavenly beings shouted for joy." It is humbling. It makes you tremble in a good way. But underneath it all, this is joyful. It's awesome, but also joyful. Remember, in Genesis 1, it says at the very end that God looked at all that God had created and saw that it was very good. That includes all of creation. That includes us. But let's remember to stay in our place in relationship to God. What follows in the next several chapters is, if you read it aloud, some of the most beautiful and profound poetry about all of creation. And it's the kind of writing that accomplishes something in us. It is wisdom writing, because it gives us a sense of proper perspective of reality, of God, and of ourselves. And it's just a beautiful description. Who has cut a channel for the torrents of rain? Can you lift up your voice to the clouds so that a flood of waters may cover you? Do you know when the mountain goats give birth? I love that line. It never even occurred to me to think about mountain goats giving birth until I read about it here in the book of Job. It just scans all of creation. And then famously, it concludes with a couple of exceedingly strange images on page 422 and 423. Look at behemoth, which I made just as I made you. It eats grass like an ox. Behemoth. This is where that word comes from. And I ask you, have you ever been to a zoo and stood in front of the cage that has elephants and just looked at the elephants and thought, how strange, how large these creatures are. Look at how it moves. What's that trunk all about? Look at those legs. Look at the feet. Look at the size as they come down. God made that. And then, in chapter 41, can you draw out Leviathan with a fish hook or press down its tongue with a cord? Leviathan. Leviathan is the giant creature of the sea. Moby Dick is kind of based on Leviathan. Have you ever been whale watching and seen the whale emerge? I mean, even just a killer whale is such a large creature. Imagine a full giant whale or some such creature emerging. And that sense of awe and wonder at this, a creature of God. The wisdom here is more caught than taught. I commend this whole passage to you, especially reading it with a sense of attention to what it's doing to your sense of self, to your sense of creation, and to your sense of God. And I commend to you to bear in mind always, underneath it, as you read this great litany, that greatest of all mysteries, God spoke.